This is the sound of football.
He's right, you know, this is the sound of football, and on this week's episode we concentrate squarely on one of the most exciting and eagerly fought out Manchester derbies for many a year. As well as that, we'll be assessing the whiff of failure that's emanating from the foot of the Premier League and paying tribute to the life of a true footballing legend, Sir Bobby Robson. That's all in this week's Sound of Football. Yes, indeed. Show number 7, Sound of Football, and it's myself, Chris Oakley, as ever. No Graham Sibley this week. We've sent him off time off for good behaviour once again. So it's just myself and Terry DeFellin here, yes. Minding the shop. Hello, Tel.
Hello, Chris.
And I think we'd better start off with the big game of the weekend, without any shadow of a doubt. Manchester United against Manchester City at Old Trafford on Sunday. And for those who've had their head in a bucket for the last few days, we should inform you that that match finished Manchester United 4, Manchester City 3. A tremendous game, packed with incident, goals and heaven knows what else. But Tel, I think we'll start off, I think, by looking at actually the defensive errors that were in the match, as opposed to all the all the goals that were flying in, because there undoubtedly were a couple of shall we say substandard defences in this game, weren't there? What did you make of the two teams as far as their defences lined up? Because there's been a lot of talk about Rio Ferdinand specifically, but taking that into account and everything else, what did you make of the two teams defensively?
I think Rio's blunder that led to Bellamy's equaliser has perhaps overshadowed the general shenanigans that was going on at the back for both teams. Mm. Obviously, the first City goal was down to a mistake by Foster, wasn't it?
It was.
He attempted to clear the ball with hilarious consequences. and also, he could be blamed for one of the others, wasn't he? Where perhaps he was a bit disappointed. I think he was caught at the near post. Is that right?
And that's correct.
And he perhaps could have done a better job. But also, City, those the two pairing, the pairing, the two pairing, the pair of Lescott and Colo Torre didn't look entirely comfortable with each other. I think, and I think on a couple of those goals, had they been communicating with each other better, maybe if they'd had a bit more time together in the saddle, then they might have been able to avoid those. And I think that we're seeing perhaps a sort of temporary situation where we've got two extremely good centre halves individually, but perhaps taking a bit of time to gel as a partnership. And anybody will tell you that you know the secret of a successful one of the secrets of a successful football team is a very strong centre-back partnership. Very rarely do you ever see a manager rotating their centre-halves.
Sure.
And so I think that perhaps they were vulnerable and Manchester United exploited them with great effect, and it was an absolutely magnificent game of football. But for the purist and for those that argue that the Premier League perhaps isn't as good a league as it makes itself out to be, and it is a bit of an argument for that, because as entertaining as it was a bit knockabout, and it wasn't. I mean, you don't really associate those kind of score lines and that kind of error-strewn defences with Serie A matches, do you, or even La Liga matches?
Quite. Yes, I guess you have to make some sacrifices. You have to break a few eggs if you're going to make an omelette, as they say.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, and you wouldn't trade that game, that experience, for quids. I mean, it was a fantastic spectacle.
Hmm.
Wonderful atmosphere, and some fantastic goals. I mean, Bellamy's goals were sensational. Bellamy's second equaliser was just awesome. I mean, I don't rate his celebration much afterwards, to be honest with you. But I mean, he was absolutely, those two goals were brilliant, and it was fantastic to watch. But yes, you know, not exactly out of the coaching book defence wise.
Yeah, I was going to come on to Bellamy actually in just a moment, but yes, I totally agree with you in terms of the defence. They did look a little bit disjointed there, but then again, they are fundamentally a whole bunch of new players just thrown together, so I'm sure it'll all sort of gel together as the season goes on. They get a bit more experience of seeing each other, you know, along that sort of defensive line. But that was undoubtedly a factor, and I think there was a little bit of sort of bit of a contretemps going on between those players at the back there, and Wayne Bridge, I think, didn't play at all well from what I could make out. He gave the ball away on a few occasions, so he was a bit below par. But as you say, Man United just exposed that weakness at the back with ruthless efficiency.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on, Tim.
Sorry, because having said that, I did think that the midfield at City played very well in those early exchanges after the United's first goal. I guess the fear would have been for City fans that United would have just steamrolled them and scored. You've seen the situation where United start like that and they go two or three up in 20 minutes. Yeah. And I thought that the midfield of De Jong and Barry, although I think he had a mixed game, I think that De Jong and Barry were very good at just breaking everything up and just stopping United getting into full flow. I mean, it was a bit. Alan Smith described them as putting out fires all over the pitch, which it was. It was a bit last grasp, and it wasn't very pretty, but it was very, very useful. I mean, at a time when nobody, while City were trying to get their heads back together again, Barry and De Jong did a good job in just stopping United from playing, and it all got a bit scrappy for 5-10 minutes while City got their heads back together again and got the equaliser. I have to say that the way that they slowly squeezed the play and isolated Berbatov and Rooney towards the end of the second half, that had Tevez scored rather than hitting the post, that they would have gone in with half time with a deserved 2-1 lead. I felt at that point that City had done extremely well to get themselves back into the game and indeed into the position where they were in the ascendancy. But obviously, in the second half, it was all it was pretty much all United. But mistakes aside, it was a different game in the second half, and I think United, perhaps on balance, deserved the victory. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, a tremendous effort on City's part to equalise three times. Of course, sort of alluded to there. I mean, you don't sort of get that very often in any match, especially against Manchester United, and you have to feel some sympathy for them that they scored three times against United and still didn't win.
Yes.
But the fact that United were the home side and had all that home support made a huge difference, I think, certainly in the second half. But going back to what you were saying earlier on, I think that, yeah, they did do a good job on Berbatov. He was kind of muted a little bit again today. I mean, sort of industrious in his own way, but not one of his most effective games, I felt.
He's a very easy man to tame.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Very, very talented, but I think he seems to be quite easy for opposition defences to just nullify him, which is a worry, I think. He doesn't have that kind of irrepressible spirit about him that makes him a player like Rooney or Ronaldo, or dare I say Cantona, which the comparisons between the two are tedious, but that kind of irrepressible quality where you sort of, I don't care how good you are, you can't beat me because my spirit is too large or something like that. sorry, carry on, I interrupted you.
No, I was going to say, Giggs these days is just looking superb. I mean, not that he ever really lost it particularly, but I mean, he's just like Rooney this year, looking so sharp. I mean, just fantastic and just instrumental in pretty much everything really that United seem to be doing through much of the game. So, and Fletcher is coming on leaps and bounds with every passing season. Yeah, he's just really coming into his own.
Deserves his two goals, and yeah, he has really matured as a player, hasn't he? You wouldn't have believed in a million years that he was anything other than somebody probably destined to go and play in the Championship. Initially go out, like so many Manchester United youngsters, they make a few first team appearances and then get farmed out on loan to the Championship and then they never come back. To his credit, he has, they have reached a point now where they really miss him when he's not playing. Fletcher, he's a fine player, not the most polished of players by any stretch.
But
certainly, for what he does, the role he performs within that midfield, he's excellent.
Quite so. And at the back, as you mentioned, Foster looked somewhat unreliable. And I mean, I've been probably banging on. I feel like I've been banging on for ages and ages about the fact that I'm a big fan of Robert Green, in terms of being England goalkeeper. And partly my argument on that is the fact that I don't feel that Foster is quite there yet, as his performances on occasions have proven. That's not to say he's a bad goalkeeper, but there are sort of lapses there, and he's still a very young goalkeeper, and I'm sure he'll iron out a lot of those errors as he sort of gets older. But not one of his better days yesterday, given I thought was absolutely superb in the City goal at the other end. I mean, just pulled off a number of great saves during the course of the game.
I think it's that needs to be remembered. I think that perhaps that's something that perhaps City fans should perhaps just take stock of, is that were it not for Shea Given, the game would have been over some time before it all reached its denouement at the end.
Yeah.
You sign and the big money players like Shea Given, you sign goalkeepers to do what he did that night, that day.
Yeah.
When your defence is breached repeatedly, your last line of defence has to be world class, because that can often make the difference over a course of a game or a season. Unfortunately for the City, it didn't make a difference for them. But goodness me, he certainly kept that team in the game until the last second, literally the last second. So
yeah.
he was magnificent, and if only he were English.
Yes, quite. Yes. When he was bought by Man City, I just thought, how could Newcastle let him go, frankly? I mean, he's one of the best goalkeepers in the Premier League, as it turned out, it was for the best, I think, for both parties. But even so, it was a huge signing, I thought, for them, and in especially in the wake of all the other purchases that City have made in recent sort of months. I just think he's all too often overlooked, Given. I think he's a fantastic goalkeeper, and Ferguson, I think, said they could have and perhaps should have won the game at 6-7-0.
Yeah.
Certainly, if it wasn't for Given, then they may well have done so, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Had a terrific
yeah.
game. But going back to Bellamy, there's been all this talk that Man City, they're in need of an attacker or two, and yet they've had this guy all along, and he put in some great performances last season, and put in a terrific performance there yesterday, as we're recording this, and two tremendous goals there, really. So, what do you make of that whole thing? I mean, should he be sort of being played? Should he be appearing on the team sheet sort of more, automatically more often, or do you think there are still some flaws to his game that perhaps justify him not being picked more often? What do you feel in regards to Bellamy?
Well, I think that it was pointed out on the Football Weekly live show yesterday after the game that they had Wayne Rooney scored that second goal, the equaliser. Then he would have been, regaled as a world class striker, but it was Craig Bellamy. The touch, the pace. I thought he'd lost it there as well. when he went down, it looked like he's taken a touch too many. He's fluffed it. He's not going to score, but he squeezed it in at the narrowest of angles, and it was a genius finish.
It was.
I think that maybe they're out. External issues surrounding Craig Bellamy and his relationship with his teammates, that I wonder that stops him from being elevated to one of the really, really, really great players, because he's never let anyone down when he goes there. His professional standards are very high, but at the same time, there does seem to be this really deep and dark side to him that's actually quite unpleasant, and I wonder whether or not that prevents the media from really embracing him as a Premier League hero. But he's a fantastic player. And you'll know from having seen him in his probably quite rare, in fairness, appearances for West Ham, and we've all seen him down the years, an explosive player with an explosive temperament, and you can't take your eyes off him for a second. And as appalling as Ferdinand's ricket was, another player would have fluffed that, and it wouldn't have made any difference. But Bellamy was the last person on the pitch that you wanted to give that ball to. And it was really, really good. So, huge praise for his ability. But, his celebration immediately after the game, where he beat the aircraft symbol to sort of, in front of the United fans, was perhaps explains why he doesn't get that much in the way of accolades, because people are perhaps a bit uncomfortable with some of the aspects of his character. They just think he's a bit of a tool, to be honest with you, and they don't really want to, give him too many props. But nevertheless, if you're just concerned with what happens on the field, he's a fine player.
Yeah, I must admit, it's crossed my mind a couple of times how people would have viewed him and what sort of path his career would have taken if United had bought Bellamy rather than say Tevez, for instance. I mean, would Ferguson have managed to get some kind of rehabilitation going with him? And because I think if say United had bought Bellamy, I think he would have just gone up so many notches in terms of his reputation, and he would have I think the whole sort of thing about him having an explosive talent, as you mentioned, would have been really nurtured and brought out to the fore, and I think he would have been nothing short of a hero amongst the United fans. And yeah. I mean, you mentioned, you know, West Ham. I mean, as a West Ham fan, it was I found that his presence in the West Ham squad was in the West Ham team was all too fleeting, really, because he was just a fantastic player. When you knew if he was on the pitch, you were always capable of getting a goal or two somewhere along the line, because he's just that kind of, he's got that kind of talent. But as you mentioned, there's this whole other side to him, and of course, after during the game, when he had some idiot running onto the pitch, he didn't exactly sort of cover himself in glory then either.
No, he didn't. I mean, there's a small part of me that is very much from the Brian Clough / Ian Walker school. If you go onto the pitch, then
you deserve what you get.
The rules of society change on the field of play, because if they didn't, then there'd be arrests and charges of assault every single day up and down the country, you know, because the rule of what happens on the pitch, as long as it stays on the pitch, is down to the FA to enforce the laws, and the police usually don't get involved. When a fan runs onto the pitch, he moves into that realm, and now I'm not sure whether or not, you know, there's a bit of a different law out there, and, you know, of all the things that Craig Bellamy has done, you know, taking issue physically with an idiot who runs onto the pitch is one of the least irksome things that I've seen him do, to be honest with you. I remember when Brian Clough grabbed the ear of that young fella, and then that guy came on to take issue with Ian Walker when he was at Leicester, Leicester goalkeeper, and Ian Walker manhandled him off the pitch.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no getting around it. I mean, things like this happen on a Saturday night in a high street, they could end up in a cell. But on the pitch, it's kind of, well, you know, this is where the rules of society are suspended, and there's a little bit more leeway. I don't know whether there'll be anything about that, but I think that he's done worse things in his life, Craig Bellamy, than that. I mean, it's a derby game, and in view of recent events, it's probably best not to do anything to incite players, and especially City are under the spotlight because of Adebayor's. Put it this way, I think slapping an oik who's run onto the field isn't anything like as bad as running 90 yards up a field and celebrating in front of your ex/ away supporters. But that's my view, that's my own sort of like moral centre. I don't know whether or not that's one that people generally share.
All right. Well, I mean, before moving on to the final point I was going to make, just on the subject of the more sinister side of the game as well, there was also the incident of Javier Garrido of Manchester City being struck by an object which was thrown at Tevez as he left the pitch, which was not too good either.
Tevez went to applaud the home fans, didn't he, as he was walking off the pitch, and that may have been construed as sarcasm.
Yes, quite.
And therefore, perhaps this just gives you an idea of just where is the line in a situation like this? I mean, what is acceptable and what is unacceptable behaviour? And it is very difficult to judge, and it's very difficult to make some kind of moral judgment over what is right. I mean, passions run really, really high at games, at football matches, as everybody who's ever been to a game knows. And they do tend to bring the worst out of people. And it's very, very difficult to be... Yeah, I think you have to be careful to be too judgmental, but coin throwing is lousy. I mean, it's just cowardly and base. And, people who do that really, you know, they lack social skills, really. You would hope they don't occupy positions of power or responsibility, frankly, because it's, you know... this is what they are. It's not pleasant at all.
No, I suspect that's highly unlikely under the circumstances. One final word just on the whole thing about, we mentioned Adebayor. Did you think he would have made much of a difference had he been playing in terms of the scoreline, or did you think pretty much Bellamy had it all sort of sewn up
I've got absolutely no idea. It's possible, yes, but as I said, when we go back to it, United could have scored four or five more goals. So, I mean, if Adebayor were in playing, maybe he would have finished 7-5 or something. Who knows? That's a difficult one to call, though.
Indeed, and of course Owen came on right at the very end and proved a masterstroke as far as substitutions are concerned.
It was a good... the masterstroke for the substitutions was the final tactical substitution during injury time just after the equalising goal by Ferguson.
Yeah.
It bought him an extra 30 seconds. And allowed City to sit there and stand there and stew during the injury time, and really wound up Mark Hughes and really wound up City, the referee gave Manchester United all the injury time that they were due, in my opinion. And controversial though it was, the game continued beyond the 4 minutes, as I'm sure everybody's aware of. And ended up with a brilliant, sensational pass from Ryan Giggs to Michael Owen, and an equally sensational finish given the timing and context of the goal. Absolutely magnificent.
Yeah. Yes, the winner went in 6th minute of stoppage time, 4 yeah. minutes indicated, and although, as a lot of people are only sort of too pleased to point out at the moment, the injury time thing is just a minimum. Period, as opposed to so for instance, if 4 minutes is held up on the board, that could actually be 4 minutes 59 at most, so to speak, and so on and so forth.
And the rules by FIFA are suitably ambiguous enough to give the referee as much leeway as he or she chooses in order to add extra time of being. And I'm bound to say, and this is not intended as a slight at Manchester United at all, but when referees come to Old Trafford, they make sure that Manchester United get absolutely everything that's coming to them. Mm. So, I mean, maybe on another day, in another ground, under different circumstances, that would have been 4.5 minutes injury time. But at Old Trafford, the referee will know to make sure that they give absolutely the right amount of time, otherwise there will be bloody hell to pay after the game. If they don't, and again, it's not an accusation of bias. It's just simply that's the environment, that's the fortress that is Old Trafford.
Mm.
That you go there now, and referees will make sure that Manchester United are given a full hearing and a full say, and perhaps at other grounds. And I think that's deep down what annoyed Hughes is that he knows that if he's facing a situation at Eastland and a goal is scored in the very last minute, doesn't matter who he's playing, and 4 minutes goes up, the chances are that under similar circumstances maybe only 4.5 minutes would actually be played, whereas at Old Trafford the full amount is played. And I think that's what annoys people, is that lack of consistency from referees, that they all perhaps not quite be so diligent with other clubs that are less likely to shout and raise hell with the FA and with the Referees and Linesmen's Association, as Alex Ferguson and Manchester United are quite capable of doing.
Very nicely put, if you don't mind saying. There we go. So a fantastic match, and it means Manchester United are second in the table. They just had that one defeat from 6. Chelsea at the top, 6 wins out of 6. They had an excellent win over Tottenham the weekend, 3-0.
And routine win over Tottenham as well.
But I beg your pardon, I didn't quite catch that, sorry.
And a routine win over Tottenham as well.
A routine,
I mean, it wasn't perhaps the close game that we'd hoped it would be, but it was okay, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think, ironically, Man City and Tottenham both in the same kind of bracket at the moment, that people now looking to them to sort of say, OK, you think you can break into the top four, let's see how you get on against a member of the top four. And they both kind of came up a little bit short the weekend, which, our views were tallying up with most people, in that we felt that City and Tottenham would be not quite breaking into the top four just yet. And the way things are going, still early doors and all that, but the way things are going, I think that will all pan out as we expect, really. But certainly Man City and Tottenham doing very well, both in the top six as we speak. At the other end of the table, of course, things are looking very grim at the moment for Portsmouth, who have lost all six matches, the only team so far that haven't won a game yet. And Portsmouth lost again at the weekend, suffice to say. What do you make of their... I mean, they just need a complete kind of shaking up, don't they, really, Portsmouth? They're just, it all went horribly wrong. They lost 2-0 at the weekend to Aston Villa. Some people have sort of said, you know, Paul Hart, good manager, but maybe not cut out to bring about a complete regeneration in the squad. But then there are so many other factors going on there. Are they already doomed to relegation, do you think, Tel?
Six games, no points.
Best of starts, really.
I mean, even at this early stage, they're going to really have to go some. The only thing that they've got on their side is that four teams above them are all on 4 points.
Yes.
Hull, Blackburn, Bolton and West Ham.
I told you not to mention that.
Sorry. They are, technically speaking, they're only two wins away from overhauling that. And the chances are that, you know, that one or two of those teams won't sort of like go on a winning run. But I mean, they've signed players at the last minute, largely from the lower leagues. I don't think they have the depth of experience and the talent, the ability, the players there to keep themselves up. I think that there's a possibility that three clubs, who are three existing Premier League clubs, could be relegated this season. I don't think it's beyond the realms of possibility. Certainly, the way you look at the way Wolves, Birmingham, and Burnley. I don't like Birmingham at all, the way they play, but they are resilient, and they seem to, all three of those teams seem to be quite determined to stay in this division and believe that they can, whereas you look at Portsmouth and Hull, and you'd have to say that's a bad team for both of them. And then there's Blackburn and Bolton, Bolton have been dicing with death for a few years now, as of Blackburn, in fairness, since Mark Hughes left, so...
But they do usually manage to pull it out of the fire, though, don't they?
But you know, how many years do you go by where that continues to happen?
that's the key question,
isn't it, Chris? And well, you've got promoted clubs down there quite happy to be worse than Bolton or indeed Blackburn. Then they've got, you know, they've only got perhaps one relegation berth to avoid. Whereas I think they might have two or three relegation berths to avoid this year, and I don't know whether or not they're good enough to do that. I haven't seen Bolton this year. I haven't had a chance to watch them. I'm not sure. I think they've gone live, but I can't bring myself to watch them.
It's more than your health deserves.
Yeah, I've seen Hull against Chelsea in the first game of the season, and I thought they were spirited but flawed. And now I don't think that they're that. I mean, they lost to Birmingham, didn't they? They lost to Birmingham, rather, at home. Is that right?
Sorry, I didn't quite catch that. Sorry.
Birmingham beat Hull at home.
Yes. Sorry, I beg your pardon. Yes. Going deaf slowly.
I don't think it looks terribly good for any of those down the bottom there. And I wouldn't be terribly surprised if that bottom three that we see, I'm not saying that this is going to happen, I'm not making a prediction, but Portsmouth, Hull City and Blackburn Rovers has a ring about it.
That's tactfully put.
Whiff of failure about that three, and indeed Bolton Wanderers. And I hope, I mean, obviously from your point of view, I hope West Ham are okay.
Yeah, I'm disappointed with the way they've started, but I think they've played a couple of tricky teams and hopefully will turn it around.
Yeah. And Wigan under Martinez, I hope Martinez is successful, and so therefore I hope Wigan are successful. That's what we could be looking at.
Quite so. Next up then on the old agenda, we're looking at sad events today, actually. Bobby Robson's memorial service, something that was very much in the news today. Many key figures from the world of football attended that today. A sad day, but also a day to remember the good things about Bobby Robson, without any shadow of a doubt. From his charity work through to his achievements in the game. What do you think will live on about Bobby Robson, do you think, Terry? I mean, will it be, do you think, the key thing be his achievements, say, at Ipswich, or the fact that he sort of had his sort of swan song at Newcastle, or his European successes, or is it simply a combination of all those things and the fact that he was such a genuinely decent bloke?
Yes, I mean, by all accounts, he was a genuinely decent bloke. Certainly did an awful lot more good for the game and for life in general than bad. He was probably the last of the sort of post-war managers, and lived in a time and has experienced, you know, the game as a post-war austere activity where he worked, where when he worked at Fulham, he used to be an electrician, and then he got a job at Fulham and he was paid £7 a week, all the way through to managing multi-million pound stars like Ronaldo, and of course, you know, managing in the Premier League. So the what he would have witnessed and to an extent shaped, because his I think for me his legacy is Italia 90, because I've made this argument before, but Italia 90 was the turning point for English football. That was the tournament that recaptured the imagination of the English public after Hillsborough and Heysel and all the violence and unhappiness of the 1980s. We had this extremely life-affirming run to the semi-final, Gazza's tears and all that, and of course Robson was the manager and the guy who not only, you know, had the skill and the acumen to put the squad together and the knowledge and the class to listen to his players when they said they weren't happy with the formation and they wanted to change it during the tournament, bringing Mark Wright, bringing that extra centre back, and it was possibly, you know, that went through, and a very, very old-fashioned man in terms of his values, but an incredibly modern manager, you'd have to say a great man.
Certainly so. The just mentioning the 1990 World Cup there, I have so much admiration for the fact that he just got rolled up his sleeves and got through the kind of worst bits of England's campaign there in the face of terrible flack from the press. I mean, they're just like basically saying, yeah, this man must go, and he just plodded on and he ground out the results and came out of it, you know, smelling of roses, and just the England team coming home hailed as heroes, frankly, having got to the last four. I mean, I just got so much admiration for him that he achieved that, and as you say, the tactical awareness thing, and you know, bringing in players like David Platt, who frankly wasn't even heard of, frankly, very, very much, at least not on the international stage anyway, and used him to great effect during that.
But it's kind of forgotten that he took a punt on Gazza as well, because there were concerns about Gazza's temperament even then. He took a punt on that. And, certainly I think that England's probably finest hour since 1966, and I think that's what he would be remembered for.
Indeed. Many fine words spoken about him today at the memorial service, particularly Gary Lineker, who was sort of featured heavily in Sir Alex Ferguson. For this particular podcast, we should draw a line under matters with a quote from Tom Wilson, former Fulham player, who recalled Sir Bobby Robson's playing days and his love for the northeast of England. As we sign off from this week's podcast, we will leave you with the quote from Tom Wilson, who said today, "Friends have said to me, you should never finish a eulogy with a cliche such as, we'll never see his like again. But we won't." And I think we're inclined to agree with that totally. For the Sound of Football podcast for this week, goodbye.